This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
All right, on last week's program, we talked a little bit about traveling. In fact, we talked a lot about traveling. We talked about it the whole show long. But while traveling, one is not doing one's usual thing. In this case, I'm referring to yours truly, going through magazines and news sources to find out what it is we may want to kick around. Now, in the modern era, you cannot get away from news if you have a cell phone and electronic means of communication. But obviously, you're only going to get part of the picture. Well, even if you're home doing your best, you're only going to get part of the picture. But let's just say when you're turning on the TV in, you know, Tbilisi, Georgia, and you're getting a BBC feed, well, you may not be getting all of what you want. Although I'll take the BBC over a lot of other sources any day. Anyway, to ease into this, I think there's probably no better method than to go to these succinct summaries, which accompany our look at the good, the bad, and the ugly. We are indebted in every case here to The Week magazine for its Good Week 4, Bad Week 4 section, plus a few miscellaneous items. According to The Week magazine, it was a good week a few weeks back for snarkiness. After Dutch scientists developed an AI-powered sarcasm detector, it's been partly trained on Friends and the Big Bang Theory. A researcher admitted that the bot can't detect every instance of sarcasm, but that's not something even humans can achieve. To that I say, oh sure, more useful high-tech developments to make our lives better, wouldn't you say? It was, on the other hand, a bad week some weeks back for, I guess you'd say, outer space hitmen, with the news that scientists have used a modified Boeing 727 to collect data on blood spatter patterns in zero gravity. These studies, said a researcher, could help forensic investigations in space. And it was an ugly week, I think you'd have to say, a few weeks back for taking responsibility. After President Biden, speaking in Michigan, reminisced that, quote, when I was vice president, things were kind of bad during the pandemic. And the President Obama dispatched him to Detroit to, quote, help fix it, unquote. In fact, Biden and Obama were no longer in office at the start of the COVID pandemic, which began in 2019. I think it would have been more accurate for President Biden to suggest that things were kind of bad during the pandemic because Trump was president. All right, that's round one. Let's do it again. It was a good week for aesthetics a few weeks back after developers in Tokyo agreed to demolish a new 10-story apartment building because locals complained it spoiled their view of Japan's iconic Mount Fuji. We were aware of the local culture that values scenery, says spokesman for Sekisui House Limited, but we failed to consider it adequately. Yeah, hats off to the Japanese on that one. Conversely, it was a bad week recently for thespians after England's Royal Shakespeare Company placed a trigger warning on its new production of The Merry Wives of Windsor, cautioning audiences that the, quote, fat knight, unquote, Sir John Falstaff, is subjected to, quote, body shaming, unquote, in the 1602 play. And to which we would add, it was an ugly week some weeks back for making tough decisions with the news that Donald Trump informed supporters at a Las Vegas rally that if he was given a choice between being eaten by a shark or being electrocuted by the battery of an electric-powered boat, he, said Trump, would take electrocution every single time. Well, you know, maybe somebody can arrange that. All right, let's do a third round. It was a good week a few weeks back, I guess you'd have to say, for disease, with the news that the North Carolina State Senate has voted to ban the use of face masks in public, even by cancer patients. GOP State Senator Buck Newton said his bill is needed to combat the craziness of mask-wearing pro-Palestinian campus protesters. Newton acknowledged that the legislation would also criminalize the wearing of masks by immunocompromised patients and people with infectious diseases like tuberculosis. But he says he trusts police to enforce it using good common sense. On the other hand, it was a bad week a few weeks back for Los Angeles. After the Postal Service announced that the city was number one in its annual, quote, dog bite national rankings, unquote. Yes, apparently with 65 postal workers bitten in 2023, L.A. has bumped Houston from the top spot. And no, Mr. Mellon, I don't have any information as to whether the Biden's first dog, Commander, may have accompanied him to L.A. on his visits out west. And it was surely an ugly week for motivated sellers after a San Francisco realtor listed a 10,000-square-foot lot in coveted Alameda. The lot's low asking price of just $400,000 reflects the fact that it sits on the bottom of a lagoon, which the property owner reportedly didn't realize when he bought it sight unseen last March, hoping to, quote, fix it and flip it, unquote. Boy, that shows how true that real estate rule of location, 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 doesn't it? What he really should have had in mind was to drain it, fix it, and flip it. All right, we talked on last week's program about how people everywhere we went wanted to kind of feel us out on the subject of Donald Trump. So I think at this point we have no choice but to take a trip into Trumpland. Just before returning home from travel abroad, I stumbled across this particular news item, which left me flabbergasted. And you think when it comes to Donald Trump, it would now be impossible to be flabbergasted. But how about this one? To quote from Matt Lewis in The Daily Beast, Trump world is aflame with a patently absurd claim of a deep state conspiracy to assassinate Donald Trump. This latest big lie began last week, this is written in the first week of June, when an FBI court document was unsealed and a MAGA gadfly tweeted a passage authorizing the agents who searched Mar-a-Lago for classified documents back in 2022 to use, quote, deadly force, unquote, only if they were violently attacked. This boilerplate search warrant language was actually intended to restrict the use of deadly force. These same words appeared in an FBI warrant to search President Biden's home. But the irresponsible and dangerous assertion that the FBI plotted to kill Trump spread like wildfire on the right. Trump said he'd, quote, nearly escaped death, unquote, and that Biden, quote, was locked and loaded and ready to take me out, unquote. Nitwit Representative Paul Gosar, Republican of Arizona, said Biden, quote, ordered the hit on Trump, end quote. And former Trump aide Steve Bannon called it an attempted assassination. I mean, words kind of fail. Writing in The Bulwark, Jonathan Last said, this manufactured plot shows we're in a very real crisis. Trump just made the startling charge that the sitting president plotted to have his political opponent killed, a claim that will become gospel for Trumpists. And the response was a collective shrug. We reached a point where one of our two major parties routinely peddles transparently nonsensical propaganda, and voters and our institutions accept it as a fact of life. And to quote from Neil Cotogio in The Dispatch, it reinforces the creeping fascist belief on the right that American institutions have grown so sinister and corrupt that an authoritarian like Trump is needed to restore order. And if the evil left is plotting the murder of their dear leader, the right will need to support forms of ruthlessness that it hadn't previously condoned. In other words, said Juliet KM writing in The Atlantic, violence. The claim that Biden and the FBI are plotting to kill Trump legitimizes the use of force by presenting it as a matter of self-defense. In a fundraising email, Trump wrote, you know, they're just itching to do the unthinkable. Don't dismiss that as Trump's typical hyperbole. He's sending a dangerous signal to supporters that Trump's enemies will do anything to take him out. Unless, of course, Trump and his mob get to them first. I don't know. After reading that, I feel like calling for a moment of silence. I mean, holy mackerel. And you have to ask, how good a job is the media doing in covering this? Let's take a look at that vaunted paper of record in America, the New York Times. I was asked by my good Fred Gordon on the trip whether I subscribed to the Times. He was rather surprised by my "I certainly do not" response. For the record, we should note that Mr. McMillan does. I presume for the recipes?
For the recipes. Their cream salmon is delicious.
Yes, I presume you're not tuning in for the news items of important national security implications.
No, I get those from Mad Magazine.
I see. Well, no, my viewpoint on the New York Times is that, you know, if you want to be really well-informed about things that aren't politically explosive, I'm sure they do a pretty decent job. But keep in mind, this is the paper that told us that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. This is the paper, among two others, that told us that Gary Webb was full of it when he alleged that there was some chicanery going on with drugs and arms in Iran-Contra. This is the paper, as far as I can recall, it didn't have that many negative things to say about the Vietnam War when it was raging. And of course, historically, we mentioned this program about a year ago, how it was that Walter Duranty of the Times was awarded a Pulitzer Prize for telling the world that there was, in fact, no famine going on in the Ukraine under Joseph Stalin. Anyway, when I think of the New York Times, I think of what Gary Webb had to say about how it was he was a believer in being a reporter and doing what a reporter is supposed to do and seeing that tough news stories get out there. Noting that nobody was a bigger believer in the system than he, until he stumbled upon a story that he realized powerful people wanted to see censored. Anyway, the questions being asked by some people about the New York Times as to whether it's being too soft on Donald Trump. Oliver Darcy in CNN.com notes that the New York Times top editor wants to make clear that it's not his job to get President Biden reelected. In a recent interview with Semaphore, executive editor Joe Kahn pushed back against critics of the paper's election coverage, saying the Gray Lady's role is to provide hard-hitting coverage of both candidates, not to be a propaganda arm of the White House. The interview lands amid a wave of backlash from readers, Biden staffers, and some Times employees who argue the paper is too focused on Biden's age and other issues that could hurt him in November, and is failing to adequately cover Trump's lies, criminality, and autocratic ambitions. For his part, Kahn insisted his paper's reporting is guided by what Americans care about. Democracy, yes, but also the economy and immigration. Should we stop covering those things, he said, because they're favorable to Trump? This is where we stand, ladies and gentlemen. New York Times editor.
I think I'm going to cancel my subscription.
You can probably get good recipes from Ladies Home Journal. Writing about these comments in The Bulwark, Jonathan Last said Kahn is either being disingenuous or is a fool. The Times can stand up for democracy without becoming propaganda for a particular candidate. If voters want to, quote, erode democracy, unquote, by electing Trump, that's their right. But the Times must do more than lay out the stakes and make damn sure that they understand what they're choosing. The national paper of record is failing at that task. In a recent campaign speech, Trump rambled into nonsense about Hannibal Lecter. His gibbering was newsworthy. It suggested Trump is non compos mentis. Yet, it didn't make the Times front page. And how about this little item regarding the Washington Post? Apparently, the Post is seeking to broaden its appeal, quote, beyond the hardest, darkest news, unquote, with a rebrand that will replace the paper's President Trump-era slogan, quote, democracy dies in darkness, unquote, with a more positive proposition. I would suggest Mad Magazine's parody of the New York Times motto, which is all the news that fits. But you know, you wonder about publications even as broad-minded as The Week, which does seek to put out opinions of all stripes to appeal to all possible readers. I was rather stunned by the April 26th edition of the magazine, which showed Trump in a pose traditionally associated with crucifixions, with the headline attached, "The Martyr. Is Trump's trial just a partisan prosecution?" I saw that and went, How can they say that? I guess they realized they'd gone too far in one direction when, 2 weeks later, the cover story showed three thuggish-looking Supreme Court justices carrying respectively a blackjack, a club, and brass knuckles, standing behind a bling festooned Donald Trump looking like John Gotti, with the headline, Protecting the Don, How the Supreme Court Could Put Trump Above the Law. But it occurs to me that I guess we have not spoken here into a microphone since Trump was made a felon 34 times over. It's kind of ironic to take a look back when we first started doing this program, which was in the year 2000, where we were able to witness the theft of the American presidential election, which was accomplished in no small part by the fact that the state of Florida saw fit to make sure that felons, and in many instances incorrectly identified felons, mainly black people, were not allowed to vote. Apparently, more than enough votes got thrown out in Florida under this pretext to throw the state into the Bush camp over Al Gore. So, isn't it unusual, isn't it ironic that 6 election cycles later, here in the year 2024, we now have a man who is a convicted felon who is not only not barred from voting, he gets to become a major party's presidential candidate. Mr. Whelan's raising a valid question here that, well, maybe he has been barred from voting. After all, he does reside in Mar-a-Lago in Florida, does he not? I know this goes state by state, and I don't have an answer for that, but we'll have to ask our good friend Greg Palast to clear that up for us. You know, I do have a feeling that even if he's unable to vote for himself in Florida, that will not impact the election. Now, I know some people that aren't as worried about Trump as I am. Our good friend Bill Simpich and I had dinner a couple nights ago, and he was expressing some belief that it won't be that bad if there's a Trump second administration. He said he feels that our judicial system is robust.
Was he intoxicated?
No, apparently not. Let's quote from the Washington Post, Aaron Blake, talking about all this, about the fact that Trump's talking about getting revenge, getting retribution. Well, Aaron Blake's saying, well, that's easier said than done. Saying, consider what happened when Trump's attorney general, William Barr, appointed a special counsel, John Durham, to probe Russiagate, the supposed deep state plot to frame Trump as a Kremlin agent. After a 4-year investigation, Durham produced nothing. Well, that's all good and well, but since Russiagate is a real thing, I'd be more concerned about the fact that Barr stepped in and derailed the Mueller investigation, and that Trump was never held accountable for his campaign's collusion with Vladimir Putin. And no, I don't think it was good enough that when the two men met in Helsinki and they had a press conference and Trump looked at the world press and said, well, you know, I asked him, referring to Putin standing at his left, you know, if he did any interference, and he said no. Of course, lest you get too complacent thinking that this might reflect reality, let's quote from John Yoo, the guy who was behind under the Bush-Cheney administration, a lot of what took place at Abu Ghraib and a lot of the torture place in the hands of U.S. forces. John Yoo says, if Trump cares about this country, he should seek retribution. It used to be a sacred democratic norm that we didn't use the legal system to pursue departing presidents. George W. Bush, for example, didn't prosecute Bill Clinton for lying to the special counsel. Someone should point out to Mr. Yoo that they spent like $30 million to investigate Whitewater and couldn't come up with anything to hang Clinton with. To quote the former president on that very issue, I believe he once said, I spent $30 million to tell you that I'm a sinner. Well, I could have told you that. Said John Yoo, paradoxically, the only way to restore the rule of law may be for Republicans to retaliate in kind with political prosecutions of Democrats from Biden on down. Well, and alternatively, Jonathan Chait, writing in the New York Magazine, said they could nominate someone who isn't a career criminal. Trump's legal troubles are indeed unprecedented, but that's because we never before elected a president who paid off porn stars, willingly absconded with nuclear secrets, or tried to stay in office despite losing an election. And when it comes to those felony convictions, it seems pretty clear that the jury thought it was a slam dunk right on down the line. All of the lies, manipulations, misrepresentations, and they called him on it. Jonathan Last, who we seem to keep quoting on this program, writing in The Bulwark, said Trump's guilt in the Stormy Daniels election interference case was as clear as day. Every Republican howling about a corrupt trial knows that Trump did just as Bragg said. He had an affair with Daniels while his wife Melania was at home with their newborn and got his fixer, Michael Cohen to pay Daniels hush money and then reimburse Cohen via bogus legal fees. Trump is guilty, and the Republicans' anger at the justice system is an attempt to avoid grappling with this basic fact. And writing in The Atlantic, Adam Serwer says, Trump is enraged not because this case was rigged, but because it wasn't. The trials he faces for far more serious federal crimes, including trying to overturn the 2020 election and stealing classified documents, have been delayed by a sustained attack on the rule of law carried out by right-wing legal activists embedded in the judiciary. These are words I think I must agree with. But just to make things even a little worse, we should note something that we were howling about several years back, which did make the news, but not to the degree we think it should have, which was the role of big tech and the tech industry in electing Trump in the first place back in 2016. Brad Parscale, using the tools that Facebook provided for him, made huge inroads into the electorate, getting people to stay home that might vote against Trump, getting people to turn out who might vote for him, that may well have made the difference in those three key states that went to Trump rather unexpectedly in the Rust Belt. Trump was something like 4 percentage points down in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin shortly before the election and carried all three states. Could social media have made the difference? Well, we would have to say maybe. And writing in the Financial Times, Alex Rogers and Hannah Murphy note that there's a cultural shift in Silicon Valley which has Democrats on edge. Influential tech leaders have grown increasingly critical of President Biden, with some considering switching allegiance to Donald Trump. Last week, two Silicon Valley billionaires, David Sacks and Chamath Palihapitiya, hosted a fundraiser for Trump in San Francisco, costing $50,000 per attendee, or $300,000 with VIP seating, and a photo with the ex-president. Jacob Hellberg, a senior Palantir executive who donated to Biden in 2020, recently announced a $1 million donation for Trump, citing, quote, his border policies and pro-Israel stance, unquote. But the most vocal Biden critic has been Elon Musk, who previously supported Biden, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama. He's since begun to mirror Trump's talking points on social media. Now, Musk hasn't said he will vote for Trump, but he held an anti-Biden dinner in Hollywood last April. In the future, we're going to have to talk about Project 2025's radical agenda. But you know what? I don't have the stomach for it today. I do note that The Economist magazine, I think, shared some of Bill Simpich's optimism that America might be dictator-proof. Anyway, in The Economist, they referred to various novelists that had taken a dim view of what might happen to America. They cite Sinclair Lewis's Buzz Winthrop from It Can't Happen Here. Robert Heinlein's sci-fi series, If This Goes On, had Nehemiah Scudder as a bad news president. And then there's Charles Lindbergh as the villain of Philip Roth's The Plot Against America. Taking a look at all these scenarios, The Economist said, nothing like the dictatorships imagined by Lewis, Heinlein, or Roth has happened, largely owing to the fact that nobody like Winthrop, Scudder, or Lindbergh has ever been elected president. To which I say, oh? We presume The Economist was paying attention during the 4 years of the Trump presidency. The Economist said that the courts of this country are independent and willful. Even the one where three of the nine justices were appointed by one of this year's presidential candidates. Anyway, not reassured by The Economist, and we'll talk more about this in the future, but let's do something else, Mr. McMillan.
Sure.
All right, in the 4 minutes or so we have left in this segment, let's do a lightning round of some goofball stories, shall we? Goofball story number one, dating from last month in May. It turns out the Hawaiian legislature has sent a bill to Governor Josh Green that would make the shaka, the hang loose gesture, a state symbol. And if you're keeping score, this would mark the first time that a state has designated an official state symbol. Of course, you have to look across the country and realize that our busy state legislatures have found time to do things like, in the state of Maine, designate a state treat, the whoopie pie, to designate a style of dance, the shag, as I guess their official dance. And just about everywhere you look, someone found time to designate a state reptile. Like, for example, the horned toad of Wyoming or the collared lizard of Oklahoma. And no, Mr. McMillan, Ted Cruz is not the official state reptile of Texas.
Aww.
But you know, if you go to New Mexico, you may be pleased to note they actually have an official state aroma, which is the smell of green chilies roasting in the fall. Goofball item number two. Apparently AI, which is being touted for doing just about everything under the sun, is now being promoted for its ability to predict how a beer will taste from the chemical compounds it contains and to make suggestions on how to improve it. I was unaware that AI had taste buds. Oh, by the way, AI, goofball story number three, it's now being touted as guessing where landmines are most likely to be hiding, presumably better than humans. And here's goofball item number four from New Scientist magazine. I'm just going to quote the headline. Radical proof stumps mathematicians. Subheadline. A 1,000-page proof of the complicated geometric Langlands conjecture has been published. It could provide key insights across math and physics if people can understand it. Another useful headline from a New Scientist. If you're raising pigs, you may be glad to know that lavender scent helps pigs feel less stressed. And final goofball item, also from New Scientist, which noted in its May 18th issue, that rhesus macaques can learn to tap to the beat of the Backstreet Boys. Now, anyone out there at the Primate Center or elsewhere that wants to see if they can replicate this study conducted at the National Autonomous University of Mexico may want to cue up some of the songs used, which included You're the First, the Last, My Everything by Barry White, A New England by Billy Bragg, and Everybody Backstreet's Back by the Backstreet Boys. Ms. Willen has also suggested they try Monkey Man by the Rolling Stones. I'm Douglas Everett. This is Radio Parallax. Stay tuned for more. We got to take a short break.